Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Thursday, March 24th, 2016. With me today, I have Brian Chaffin. How's it going, Brian?
Goes well.
Awesome. That's as it should be. John Martellaro, how are you?
Still digging out 18 inches of snow here.
Yeah, there's a lot of snow here, too.
But yeah, we'll get out. Finally, we'll get out today.
Excellent. I'm glad that you're not going to be stranded. I'm glad that we're not going to see a documentary about your life that looks more like a redo of The Shining.
Did I say 18 inches?
Yes. Yes, you did.
Mm. Oh, I meant 60 centimeters or 50 centimeters.
Nerd.
Oh, 40 centimeters. Nerd.
Hey, we have a sponsor this week. I say changing the subject so that we don't have to talk about John's nerdness. And our sponsor is Bushel, the company that makes the awesome device management platform that's so easy to use and priced totally awesome. We'll talk about them soon. But before we do that, John, we need to talk about a review you wrote yesterday. And this review is for the Minix Neo C USB C multiport adapter, and it's for the MacBook with the USB C port on it, and it's an adapter that adds in a bunch of other ports like what's it have, camera slot, HDMI,
two USB-A's, and Ethernet. There's one model with the HDMI, and there's one model for VGA, in case you do a lot of overhead projection stuff, because they still use those VGA connectors.
Which I just find so weird. But anyhow, and I gather you liked this.
I did. I liked it a lot. The first one I ever reviewed was a simple McAuley 4-port USB-A hub. And a hub, I'm told, is a device that converts USB into multiple USB, whereas a dock has multiple different ports. So you have Ethernet, you have HDMI, you have photo cards, you have USB-A and stuff like that. So technically, this little Minix multi-port adapter is a dock. And it plugs into the MacBook with USB-C, and it has a USB-C outlet on it, so it's got a pass-through power, which is nice. And as we said, there's two different models. And what's really cool about it, in contrast to the Satechi I reviewed previously, is that it connects to your MacBook with a cable, so that it can rest on the table, and you can lightly put your finger on top of it, because it has rubber feet, and insert different connectors without putting any strain on the USB port on the MacBook. Of course, the MacBook only has that one USB port, and if it gets damaged, you're sort of out of luck. So this flexible cable that plugs in totally relieves the stress, and you can tug and pull and push different cables, connectors into the Minix without putting any stress on the MacBook, which that's alone is worth having in contrast to the Satechi I reviewed.
Okay, so it takes your one USB-C port, adds a bunch of other ports, so you can plug a lot of other things into it, and you like it, and it looks like a good product. And if you like it, that tells me it is a good product. But
it's probably the one I'll travel with.
Okay, well that says a lot right there. All right, so we have a reader who has a comment that I think you need to address, John. So Ty, he said, anyone who bought a MacBook and needs this bought the wrong Mac. John Martellaro, what say you?
Well, you know, there is a case for that. A year ago when the MacBook first came out, it was a shock to our system, and there weren't too many devices that were compatible. I think Apple, when I bought my MacBook, I ordered the USB-C to female USB-A adapter, and I used that for flash drives. And for a long time, that was the situation. But we also had a feeling that this was the wave of the future. And a couple things have happened since then. At CES, a whole bunch of new USB-C hubs and docks were announced. I reviewed this glorious Otherworld Computing USB-C powered dock that sits on your desktop, and it has a whole lot more ports than the Minix, and it does a whole lot more things, and it's powered, has a power brick and everything. So you can set your MacBook down and plug it into the universe. Now, the other thing that's happening is that we got a glimmer that this was the direction Apple was taking when the MacBook first came out. And we were talking on the show just the other day about how we suspect that the new MacBook Pros will probably inherit the design and the port configuration of the MacBook. This is the future. This is where Apple's going. If you need one of these docks, fine. But the days of having the side of your MacBook littered with all these different ports, when in fact most of the stuff can be done wirelessly, you've got AirPort, you've got AirDrop, you've got Wi-Fi. So this is the direction Apple's going, and it creates some grief for traditional users, and they all love the MacBook Airs, and they should. But I think this is where Apple's headed, and now we have solutions.
And I think that there's plenty of, I mean, everybody obviously has a very subjective case for what works for them, but I think that there are plenty of very reasonable and rational ways in which one could very much want the MacBook for its portability, right? Mm-hmm. And but when you're at your home or your office, you need the extra connectivity provided by the product that John reviewed.
Right. It's as it should be.
I mean, and so you can still need this and it not be in you and not have picked the wrong device.
Exactly.
Yeah, I can see scenarios where this is your go-to travel computer, and maybe you work in an environment where wireless is not allowed for security reasons. So you have to wire into everything. All right, it's still the right computer for you, but you're going to need to add in physical ports, and something like this lets you do that.
What I should note is that this Minix dock will not function at all on Ethernet unless you install a driver. But there is an easy download. There is extensive 14-page PDF manual, and there's an uninstaller script. And because of the chipset, the Ethernet driver is specific to that chipset and won't interfere with any other Ethernet drivers that you may have installed. So they did a really good job designing this.
Awesome. That's cool. And so I guess we're in agreement. For some people, this is a perfectly right choice for a computer, the MacBook. And for other people, not so much. And for some people, where it is the right choice, even needing to add in a bunch of extra ports like this, it could still be the right choice. It all depends on how you need to use your computer.
You know, right out of the box, last summer I took it on travel, the MacBook, and all I needed was the USB-A to USB-C so I could plug a flash drive in. Since then, I've reviewed a little flash drive that has USB-A on one side and USB-C on the other, so you got that solution. But I was perfectly functional with my MacBook on that trip, with just the ability to plug a flash thumb drive into my MacBook. So I wasn't really hindered too much. And you guys all handled it, and you guys liked it.
Yeah. I think it's a nice little computer. Hey, we have a sponsor this week, and that sponsor is Bushel. And I'm pretty excited about this because I have to manage quite a few iOS devices and a few Macs as well. And as it turns out, not all the iPhones and iPads that I manage are mine. I'm actually taking care of my parents' iOS devices as well, because I'm a nice guy like that. And what I like about Bushel is that it lets me take all of these different iPhones and iPads and Macs and group them together into a single web interface. And then I can make sure that they all have the right settings for whatever it is that they need to have. So I can force strong passcodes to be used. I can set up all the email settings for each device and just have all this stuff right there ready to go. And if something goes wrong, like someone goes in and messes with their settings and suddenly can't check email, no problem. I can just push their settings back out to their device for them. And it doesn't matter that we aren't in the same room or even in the same city. I can just do it. And it's great. It also means that I have everyone's serial number, which is good. If something gets lost or stolen, I have everyone's iOS version number, so I can tell if someone is behind and I need to urge them to get up to date. And if a device is lost or stolen, which hasn't happened yet, I can wipe the device remotely too, which is pretty cool. So I just love how easy Bushel is to use. I love how it's made not only my life, but the lives of my family members easier too, because now they don't have to worry about things like how did they manage to screw up their email settings. I also like the price. You can manage three devices for free. That's it, just free. And any device you need to manage beyond those first three costs you $2 a month. So it's really affordable. Unlike a lot of other mobile device management solutions that are out there, where you're going to pay a lot of money just to get in. And you need to be a serious IT pro to figure out how to use them and to manage them properly. So there, you know, there's a lot of overhead in using these other services. But Bushel makes it easy. It's something that any of us can do without having to strain our brains at all. I just love it. So what you need to do, because of course you have devices you want to manage, head over to the website. That's bushel.com/TDO. So that's BUSHEL.com/TDO. And when you go to that link, it lets them know where you heard about Bushel. And that's great, because that gives them a little pat on the back for getting someone checking out the service. It gives us a little pat on the back for sending you their way. And you guys get to have three devices for free, no problem. It's a win all the way around. So go check it out, bushel.com/TDO. And thank you, Bushel, for being our sponsor. All right. So another thing I wanted to hit today is kind of a loop back. And Brian, I'm going to loop you in. Seriously?
I see what you did there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good.
Anyhow, so we talked some yesterday about how the FBI is most likely using Cellebrite to hack into the iPhone that was recovered from San Bernardino mass shooter Syed Farouk. And so Cellebrite thinks that they have a way that they can access the encrypted contents of the iPhone without actually destroying the device. And so we talked about that yesterday. And since then, there's been speculation that the FBI may have actually known about this possible option much earlier, like maybe even before Director James Comey was sitting in front of a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing talking about this very issue. And I'm curious, what do you guys think?
Well, first ran across this idea on March 7th when Dan Gilmore, the technology fellow at ACLU, posted his article at the ACLU site on this technology. Mm-hmm. So March 7th was the first time I became aware of that issue. And you would have thought that astute members of the community and even the FBI's own research people would have become aware of this article. Trying to ignore it doesn't work. Trying to pretend you didn't hear about it didn't work because of the incredible energy in this discussion. And so I'm sure all sorts of people brought this article to the FBI's attention. So that was when I first became aware of it. And I'm sure the FBI must have become aware of it within days or maybe that same day that this article came out. So I was a little bit mystified by the FBI's continuing efforts. But I think what happened was is that it dawned on the FBI at the last minute that Apple was probably, being the astute company that it is and having the great lawyers that it has, was probably going to roll this out in court and say something like the FBI has had 2 weeks to break into this phone with technology X, the NAND substitute technique. And then in that case, the FBI would look very bad in court. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why they bailed out at the last minute.
It could be. I think that it's more likely that the FBI decided that it was going to lose
and well, that
grasp that straws. And it's not like the ACLU invented this method. This method, John Keith, the devil's advocate, suggested it in a very offhand manner in, like, I don't know, the first hour after this became, when did this story first break? It was in February, wasn't it?
Yes, it was in February.
This first started becoming a thing. John Keith offhandedly suggested it in the opening hours, and he offhandedly suggested it in the opening hours because he was familiar with the concept elsewhere. So if this is what Cellebrite is going to do, it should not have been news to the FBI to begin with. I mean, after all, this is something they have to deal with. Right. I mean, this method, I mean, and certainly the NSA has to be very familiar with this particular particular method of doing this sort of thing. Of course, I still think that the FBI never approached the NSA to begin with because they didn't want the NSA's help getting into this device. They instead wanted to have a forced backdoor in the first place.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, Brian. I really think that the FBI's primary objective here was not, can we find someone to help us get into this iPhone? But can we set a precedent where we can force companies to give us access to encrypted data more easily?
Yeah, using the All Writs Act. And remember the court order that the FBI was granted was not Apple has to do whatever it has to, because Apple could do the same method too, right? There's probably lots of entities, lots of security related entities, companies, in other words, consultants, hackers, government agencies that could do this method that was tossed out by the ACLU that John mentioned. But that's not what the court order was. The court order was that Apple had to go and create this operating system that bypassed some key security features for iOS devices. And, you know, it had to allow the FBI to not enter the passcode manually so that they could just, you know, have a computer run them through a lickety split. And it had to not erase the device after a number of tries. And these were all very specific remedies that the FBI was looking for, not just looking to get into the device.
Right. And when you put that together with the news that's coming out about Cellebrite and the likelihood that the FBI knew about the possibility of being able to use a NAND mirroring technique to get into the iPhone, it makes the FBI look either disingenuous at best, or it makes them look incompetent. Disingenuous meaning they knew about this and then chose to tell people they did not, or incompetent in that everyone else knew about this and was talking about it, but it completely flew under the FBI's radar.
Jeff, I got to disagree with you on that. I have a theory. I don't believe the FBI was incompetent or disingenuous. My theory is, I'm going out on a limb here, but my opinion is that the FBI has historically been accustomed to procedural, legal, and law enforcement activities. And in this case, what happened was the entire structure of the internet, the enormity of the technical community, all of the former NSA directors and Twitter and the technical community, Electronic Frontier Foundation, and the enormity of the technical community organized itself, as well as Apple, and came crashing down on the FBI's traditional administrative techniques, and they wilted. because they weren't an agency that would, like Apple or the internet or some of these other organizations, who was deeply steeped in this stuff every day, lived it and breathed it. They came in to do it from a legal perspective, from a law enforcement perspective, and expected to win by force of those techniques. And the entire technological effort of the internet came crashing against them, and they blinked.
I'm going to offer a slightly more nuanced version.
Okay.
The FBI and the DOJ both have approached this entire situation from the standpoint that they need to be able to get into devices.
Mm-hmm.
So their focus has been, this is crazy. We can't have these devices that we cannot access. You know, we can't have these black boxes that are immune to our warrant, to our lawfully to our lawful warrant searches. That's not even a term, but whatever, roll with me.
And it is now.
And they have been so fixated on that idea that their attempts at remedies have all been attempts to achieve that specific remedy. And I mean, you know, the FBI and the DOJ are full of very competent people. I don't think that this shows incompetence. I think that it shows that that human beings are involved, and that they had tunnel vision on getting the solution that they feel is appropriate and they feel that they desperately need. I disagree with that, but that's not the point. I'm talking about their perspective. Mm-hmm. and everything they've been trying to do has been to get this problem solved from their standpoint.
And the NSA knew how to do it, but the NSA didn't want to tell the FBI, well, we do this all the time. It's easy for us. You go figure it out. You want to make a fool of yourself and you want to compromise the secure national security, you just go at it, but we're not going to lift a finger.
there's no way the NSA told them that. That's my emerging theory. I cannot see a scenario in which they asked the NSA and the NSA refused.
Well, the NSA probably considered it classified information beyond the need for the FBI to know on their misguided efforts. Because if the former directors of NSA and CIA were against them, if the former head of Homeland Security was against them, if the military was against them, the Department of Defense was against them, and the entire weight of the technical and encryption community was against them, the NSA was probably not exactly a big fan of this FBI case. And if they had techniques that they had that were effective, they sure as darn weren't going to make them public knowledge.
They're sure as what, John?
Sure as heck.
You cycled through about four bits of profanity there before you settled on darn.
Yeah, but I pulled it out.
You did.
Thank you for saving me from having to do an edit. I do appreciate that.
I can buy you lunch this week.
Yeah. Hey, we're out of time, so we're going to have to wrap up now. Brian, thank you so much for being here.
Always good to solve all problems.
I know. I feel so much better now. John, thank you for being here.
You're welcome. Where's that snow blower?
It's probably still buried under a drift. Listeners, I'm really curious. What do you think about the FBI and the whole Celebrate thing? And we've offered up all of our opinions on what's going on. I want yours too. So let me know. You can send me your thoughts on Twitter. That would be at TMO Daily. You can shoot me emails, observations@macobserver.com. And you can leave comments in the show notes for today's episode. I'll check all those places because I want to hear what you have to say. And go check out Bushel. I'm so glad they're a sponsor this week. Start managing your devices much more intelligently. And make yourself happier. Bushel.com/TDO. Go check them out. And listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.